Soccer fans, gear up at Soccer 90, DFW's largest in-store collection. Real Madrid, Man U, Juventus, FC Dallas, and a whole lot more. Soccer 90 at Toyota Stadium, next door to the National Soccer Hall of Fame in Frisco, or soccer90.com. Soccer 90, love it, live it, wear it.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, it's the Zico and Ted Eck of radio. Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Church, tried to find El Nene, claims of handball by the crowd and by the Arsenal players. Oh, they don't care anymore. Granit Xhaka with an absolute thunderbolt. That's nearly taken the goal out of the ground here at the Emirates. They need that. Arsenal restore their 2-goal lead and they're heading into fourth place. What a goal by Granit Xhaka.
Hi-da-ho, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. Don't forget that you can find us on our kick-ass website, The kickaround.com. Hi, my name is Peter, and also inside this broadcasting mecca, blowtorch, Marconi winning radio station, noted soccer expert, Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter. Condolences.
Why?
To you and your club.
Oh, stop it.
For officially being kicked out of the running.
I don't need that from you. I don't need your pity, sir.
For your baby cup. What did you call it last week?
The fruitcake cup.
The fruitcake cup, yeah.
So. Yes. We have so much stuff to discuss, and today is one of those shows where we have called in the cavalry. Lars Sivertsen will be joining us shortly live from London to talk all things Premier League. I got a lot of questions for that smart guy. I got some questions about what's happening up at first place. I got some questions for him about Fulham. I got some questions about all kinds of stuff, Andy.
Do I get to ask a question or two?
I hope so.
Does he have all the questions?
Okay. I hope so.
Right. Okay.
I was waiting for you to throw in a question, but you didn't seem interested in doing that. And then we're going to return to some of our other crew. Daniel Robinson will join us to talk all about Serie A and Tyler Kern, Bundesliga. We'll also do a little Champions League semifinal talk, because that starts here right quickly. But first, we will discuss the day in the Premier League. Got up early this morning in my footy pajamas, unhatched the back end so I could do that business, and then sat down with a cup of coffee and watched Arsenal hosting Manchester United, a key fruitcake cup matchup.
Yes, one that nobody seems to want to win and take home. But what were your expectations? Because it didn't go well for United earlier this week.
No,
because after our last show before today,
yeah, United got tanked.
Yeah, by Liverpool.
By Liverpool, and a very easy walk in the park for the Reds.
It was, but it really, I mean, if you're a United supporter, that game must have was that the bottom?
Well, I mean, in terms of it being your darkest rival, and now you've lost to them in worse over the course of a season than you ever have in modern football.
But just
between
the way
they
lost on Tuesday.
Yeah, but yeah. There's a lot of, look, you know, it's funny. Think about this particular week for United. Look, let me say this. I get it. Manchester United have literally for generations run roughshod over English football. So when they are finally in this particular state, the Schadenfreude, what is that word?
Schadenfreude
is well deserved by everybody else to goof on United. I will say, though, maybe a small level of empathy is earned this week, because in this week they had to go through yet another announcement of hiring a new manager.
Yeah.
They got stomped by their hardest rivals and shut out.
Mm-hmm.
The star of the club had a neonatal death.
right?
That happened.
Yeah.
And its beleaguered big money center back had to be evacuated from his home because of a bomb threat.
So the things just keep piling on for United.
So I'm just saying, if you were to take any one of those stories and apply it to your favorite professional American sports team here in the United States, you know that would be a major deal. So have all of those things happen in the course of a week is, it can kind of tell you the state of the club.
Right, yes. But, you know, a lot of that is out of their control. But now thinking about this, that the manager they hired to be the interim manager, it's very easy to second guess now that decision. But he just, when you look at his history in managing other clubs, he really hasn't had a lot of success at the club level. He's been a really good director of soccer, a director of football at clubs. And he really made the Red Bull brand and all those teams rise. But he's a good tactician, but I don't think he's a motivator at all.
I just think it's a vibe. I don't think you can put what's going on with the team at Ragnit's feet. Because, look, since whatever year Sir Alex has left, this club has run through an umpteen number of managers like underwear. Eric Tangaha, I've said this a lot. Ten Hag, Eric,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Is essentially another pair of underwear for this club. That's not a statement about how good or bad of a manager
right.
he is,
yeah.
But until the belly gut rot and chronic diarrhea that is this club is cured, just another pair of underwear.
So you're saying it's management, ultimately.
It's front office, it's management,
okay.
It's how they...
Right.
Now,
okay.
I do think there are small indications that there are fixes happening in the front office. Woodward's not there anymore. They've kind of built a little bit of a structure in terms of a director of football, and they're trying to make these changes here and there. And I do think the new guy is an interesting hire, but I also thought Regonk was an interesting hire.
You did?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, when they hired Mourinho, I was masochistically intrigued by that, in love with it. When they hired Ole, it was a romantic,
back to
you
old
know,
times.
Old times kind of thing. When they hired Regonk, I was like, man, that's a proper modern guy that can help put things right.
Ideas, but maybe not as a manager, not as a gaffer.
But I would suggest to you that is a byproduct of the reality that he is an interim guy, and the players are like, why am I bothered?
But maybe, that's my point.
See, I don't think it has anything to do with his skill sets as a manager, and it's everything about the scenario.
Okay.
And that's what you've seen over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Is this
club.
The worst stretch for United that you remember as a supporter of United?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And the end result of this season will bear that out.
Yep.
The best thing that could happen to United right now is essentially figure out how some way to end up in eighth place.
Yeah,
because what you don't want to do is have to go visit Iceland and Azerbaijan and Moldova or whatever.
If you finish seventh.
If you finish seventh and you play in that godforsaken European conference.
But will
league.
You take Europa League? You'll take Europa League, right?
I would rather not do that either. I would rather to let the new guy just deal with the Premier League and domestic
You're
tournaments
next year. You're willing to punt with all that? And
absolutely.
Then, okay.
Yeah.
Because right.
I don't think any of those things are going to help you. I don't think playing in either one of those secondary leagues are going to help you sign players.
We'll talk about that with Lars, too, when we talk about him. Okay.
Well, if you didn't see the game, we should spend a few minutes talking about Arsenal, because Arsenal into itself is an interesting story. As you saw, they had a big week. They had a huge win against Chelsea at midweek. That was a substantial win for them. Arteta, this is the week where it now feels like Arsenal once again is the team that's going to end up in fourth place. Now, that story may change next week, right? There are so many things I really like about Arsenal. I've said this before. Smith Rowe is probably my favorite player in the Premier League right now. I love Odegaard. But they've got a striker issue, and their defense is absolutely a circus. Because you saw that against Chelsea, and again today, for as bad as United were, Arsenal tried really hard to give that game back to United.
Had that game ended up 3-3, we would have been like, yeah, okay.
Right.
Yeah. I know, amazing.
If Bruno doesn't miss the penalty kick, which is a whole weird story under itself, that I honestly believe Arsenal melts, and there's a very good chance United not only end up drawing that game, but maybe even wins it.
Yeah.
Because the way Arsenal's been playing of late, they can just go from really, really good attacking play and let a bunch of brain farting in the back end bring them down. And that, luckily for them today, Bruno let them off the hook.
Are you done with Arteta's antics?
You know that
sideline antics.
What was his deal on the VAR?
I didn't understand
VAR.
Why he's like saying, okay, cut it.
You because know? I thought it was very clear that he was coming over to review the video that was only going to end up in Arsenal's favor.
Correct.
And I can't figure out why he was acting.
I don't know. And just he's so, I don't know, over the top. Like Conte is emotional, and but in a different way, you know? Like Arteta's just,
well, it's
like
because
negativity.
Because Arteta has two speeds. He has that over the top kind of extreme fist pumping, and then he has I'm dead inside doll eyes with Lego hair look.
Yeah.
Like he's a robot.
Right.
And it's either one or the other.
Well, he's got his team rolling now. By the way, Ronaldo's goal, there's no better, but obviously no better player than him in tight spaces and finishing. I mean, the guy is genius, right?
That was like goal was from out of nowhere, yeah. And it was it's such a difficult, high-level skill to finish that goal. Just, I know people hate this guy, and you probably have very good reason to, but just let this soak in for a minute. He has now scored 100 goals in the Premier League, in Serie A, in La Liga.
Are those pretty good leagues?
That is the most.
Are those leagues good?
That's ridiculous.
Is that good?
And he has like another like 90 goals for his national team.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's crazy.
That was you know what? And to be fair to him, coming off the tragedy of his family situation, he actually played really well today.
Yeah.
It was Fernandez who's been terrible for a while now.
I know.
And they just signed him to a brand new deal, by the way. So Arsenal does go on to win that game 3-1. And I won't even get into some of them really weird VAR and refereeing decisions. We'll just let that go for the day. Very, very strange stuff. But good for Arsenal. Look, at the end of this weekend, I'm going to be the guy, based especially off the other result we'll talk about here in a second. I think Arsenal's a shoo-in now for the Fruitcake Cup.
A shoo-in?
Well, ask me again after the show next week. We'll see what happens.
Wow.
Arsenal has to play West Ham. United has Chelsea, and Spurs has, I can't remember who Spurs has off the top of my head. They've got a relatively easy one. This whole thing could flip again, right? Because now Spurs is 2 points behind Arsenal.
Yeah, and look at Chelsea. I mean, they got to straighten it up a little bit to make sure they finish top four.
Now, speaking of which, and the reason why we're at this point with the Fruitcake Cup, which, by the way, is the fourth place that nobody wants this season, Tottenham did go to Brentford today to play the Bees. And for this is the stat that I can't get my brain wrapped around.
When you
told
me the stat, I was like, no, that's wrong, because today they had this.
So after going losing to Brighton and producing zero shots on goal, they go to Brentford across London and they draw 0-0 and produce zero shots on goal.
When you told me this, and I watched the game, I'm like, no, they had shots on goal.
No, but then when they had shots, not on goal.
Yeah, wow.
And I saw 95% of this game, and I'm telling you, I thought Brentford was the team that deserved to win this game.
Clearly, yes. I agree.
And I can't figure out why Conte is struggling so hard. There are times where this team looks amazing and they look like they're really playing in the Conte way. And then they just, the last two games, they just look.
But this whole season, they've been as Jekyll and Hyde as they come. They really have.
Yeah, it's really strange. By the way, is Conte's bodyguard a new coaching assistant? I've never seen this guy before. Have you seen, you know who I'm talking about?
The guy that they showed today?
On the sideline next to Conte when they're substituting guys, who's wearing the black suit with the black turtleneck, and he's bald, and he looks like all he does is lift weights all day? He looks like Conte's bodyguard.
Right, yeah, no, that's
I've never
that's
seen
an
that
assistant.
Dude. Is that a coaching assistant?
It has to be.
He doesn't look like a football assistant manager. He looks like a guy that belongs at a very, very fancy CrossFit.
Maybe he met him, he met him at a fine restaurant and invited him to the game.
It's like they hired Goldberg's younger brother or something over there. That's crazy. Yeah, and by the way, it was really cool to see Christian Eriksen play against Tottenham, and the Tottenham fans over in the corner give him a really nice round of applause. What a great story. You know, his deal is up at the end of the year, and he's done so many good things for this really nice stretch for Brentford that has kept them up in the Premiership. which I continue to think is probably the best story of the season so far, is just how well they've done for themselves. Whether or not he stays in London at Brentford when he'll probably have a lot of other suitors and much bigger clubs.
Yes. It's going to be a tough decision for him because you know part of him wants to stay at Brentford and give this club a chance that, you know, gave him a chance.
Yeah. It is crazy. So Tottenham and Brentford 0-0. Brentford's fine. Tottenham now is 2 points behind Arsenal between fourth and fifth place. As I said earlier, Arsenal beating Manchester United in a weird. If you were a neutral, the Arsenal United game I'm sure was highly entertaining. And to let Xhaka hit that goal, oh my god!
Well, yeah, that was an amazing.
It was a great
strike,
hit,
but
him of
look,
all people,
that was offside.
Yeah, the guy, okay, yeah, I think there's an argument there, but yeah. Whatever. The other game, Newcastle beating Norwich today, 3-0. Newcastle, look at this. Believe it or not, they are now in ninth place.
They are in ninth place. Can you believe it? And I thought
ridiculous.
They were going to go down. Look at what a little money coming in from
smartly
a, from a country
spent
does for you.
Money. And that guy, Bruno... What a nice player they've added to that team.
They're not done yet.
He's had a nice little run of late, scoring again today in the 49th minute. Leicester City and Aston Villa went donuts today. Nothing really to worry about between those two guys. And Manchester City kept themselves just this much further ahead of Liverpool by annihilating Watford in the easiest of styles. Gabriel Jesus with the quad today hit 4 goals. And Rodri with the 5th as they beat up on Watford today 5-1. So that's what happened
in
the Premier League today. Tomorrow, Brighton is hosting Southampton. Burnley is hosting Wolves. Chelsea and West Ham United. And then the big game, the Merseyside.
What's your prediction?
Derby. Liverpool. Oh, Liverpool's going to stomp them.
That's this is a, what do you call it? Like a setup game.
A trap?
A trap.
This is a
trap.
Oh,
it is.
You are being such a sandbagger.
I know, I'm telling
Liverpool and Everton, and on Monday, Crystal Palace is hosting Leeds. When we come back, we'll dial up the interwebs live from London. It is Lars next on the Kick Around.
MLB The Show 22 is out now. MLB The Show 22 is super fun for both hardcore and casual baseball gamers. No matter what your play style, MLB The Show 22 has you covered. Get it now for PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo consoles at theshow.com. Rated E for everyone. Head over to the ticket.com contest page and register now for your chance to win a copy. You play MLB The Show? Baseball game?
No.
Peter?
Okay. I do not.
All right.
Welcome back to Ye Olde Kick Around. I'm Peter. He's Andy. And we're going to do this now and fast and get right to it because we got so much to cover with him live via the miracle of the internet from London, England, our favorite noted soccer journalist from over there, Lars Sivertsen. Hello again, Lars.
Hi, guys.
Lars.
How y'all doing?
Good. I have enjoyed watching you gallivant around England, attending various and sundry football matches, including going to the Luton Town game a week ago.
Yeah, I went to 4 games in four days over Easter, and I had a lot of fun. Took in Luton, Nottingham Forest, Tottenham, Brighton, West Ham, Burnley, and QPR Derby. Good spread.
And what of the four was your favorite?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Listen, being a traditionalist, I really like Luton Stadium. That was fun. It was a very fiery game as well. Luton actually picking up 8 yellow cards, which I think is impressive in a game. I enjoyed the effort. 8.
Oh, that's amazing. I need to go to that stadium. I've heard really cool things about it. Our friend Dan Crook over here is from Luton, and he's told us some good stories about that place before. I guess they're getting ready to tear it down here soon, too.
Yeah, they're moving to a new venue. And I mean, it's one of those the traditionalists will be sad to see it go. It was once described to me as really just a succession of sheds that's all sort of smashed together. And it is very old fashioned. And actually having that on one day and going to Tottenham the next day was a pretty extraordinary contrast.
Oh my gosh.
I do prefer the older stadiums. I am one of those type of people. But I have to say, if it's got to be a new venue, if it's got to be a new build, it's hard to beat the new Tottenham Stadium. It is a pretty magnificent place.
Did you go to the cheese shop inside the new Tottenham Stadium?
I did not. But I did have a lot of the. There is a type of beer that is apparently brewed on the premises and sold nowhere else. So I had quite a bit of that.
Did you?
All right, Lars, I want to talk about lots of things with you over the course of this and the next segment, but I suppose, and I'm tired of talking about Manchester United. I just feel like nobody really cares about them anymore because...
I am very intrigued with Manchester United
these
days,
Peter. Yeah, you just love rubbing it in my face.
I'm very intrigued with this whole situation.
It dawned on me earlier today, Lars, and I don't know if this will make sense to you, that since the Premier League... was signed by NBC here in the United States, which is really the outlet that made them a popular thing. United has won the Premier League exactly zero times. And there is a significant percentage of the American fan base that only know United as just another Premier League club, not the massive giant. And that's why I worry about talking about them too much, because they're not interesting anymore, I think, to the new generation of fans of the sport here in the country.
Well, au contraire, I would disagree. I think they're very interesting because they keep failing in very interesting ways.
Thank you, Lars.
I agree. I think what's worth saying as well, for the benefit of listeners who might be slightly new to the sport, is that if you go back to the 90s, they were basically the Death Star, right? So for me, growing up in that period, United messing up will never stop being funny, I don't think. That's just kind of... you just kind of live there. And also, they're fascinating because... In European football, European soccer, you know, money almost always guarantees success in the long run. The line you can draw between a team's salary expenses and their league finish is, the correlation is usually very, very strong. And United continue to be a very strong outlier, and you might not enjoy talking about it, but it makes them interesting.
Well, for all the supporters, United supporters, the time has come. Their savior is finally here. The one that will now fix the squad. Tell us about Ten Hag. How will this work? And did I pronounce his name right?
Ten Hag is fine. Yeah, I think you worded it very well in the sense that you said he is the man who will fix the squad. Which is the interesting thing here. I don't watch Ajax every week. I watch them in the Champions League occasionally. I have a very positive impression of his current team, the Dutch champions Ajax. But I've spoken to people who follow Dutch football closer than I do. I suppose had a long conversation with an analyst who covers the league and that sort of thing. And really the consensus is that Ten Hag is a very, very good coach. He's a good tactician. The players who have worked with him speak very highly of him, how he's improved them and all that sort of thing. But what's also noted is that he's not the most charismatic character in the world. So if there's one thing that concerns me a little bit,
you mean he's Dutch?
Is that we know... Well, come on now. There are many charismatic Dutch people. But we know that this Man United squad can be, shall we, demanding. Maybe that's a polite way of saying. So that's something that maybe worries me a little bit. And I think, you know, a lot of it will be to do with what United do in the transfer window this season, this summer, because something has to happen to the composition of the squad. There's some important decisions that have to be made, and the head coach coming in can't fix anything on his own. But if you are a Man United fan... Now, actually, almost a long-suffering Man United fan has created. It sounds like a crazy thing to say out loud. At least you can relax and know. I think the guy who's in charge from next season is a very good coach, a very intelligent man with a record of improving players. And I'd be happier as a fan with him being in charge than with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Even with Ralf Rangnick, even though I kind of like him, and certainly happier than with Jose Mourinho because of the sort of the roller coaster of doom that you know you're on with that guy. So you can relax and know that the guy in charge knows what he's doing.
Okay, hold on a second. But we all, I don't know, however many months ago, were like, well, you know, Ralf Rangnick is a legit modern football manager thinker, yet somehow the Manchester United circus has compacted him into... essentially an afterthought, like an incompetent, can't do, like he doesn't know what he's doing kind of guy. And I'm just like, why do anybody think that unless a lot of other things change in other parts of the club, that anything's going to be different with this guy than it was with Rangnick, Solskjaer, Mourinho, or anybody else that's coached this team since Sir Alex?
Well, it's kind of why I bring up the transfer market, because the composition of the squad needs to change a little bit. And we spoke about this on this show, how Ragnik is a modern football thinker and all this, but he is an evangelical believer in like the high press and everyone running a lot. And it turns out there are quite a lot of players at this Man United team who would rather not do that.
Right.
And if you sort of read through the lines of everything Ragnik has said in recent interviews, I mean, he's come this close to just saying these are lazy bastards. Like, I don't like coaching any of these. He's very frustrated with his situation and with the players, and it's very clear that he hasn't been able to do the things that he wants to do as a coach.
Am I crazy to think this, though? But because as bad as United has looked, I still think they're not far from top four next year. I mean,
oh my gosh.
You think the gulf is wide?
No, I agree with you, but I think they need strengthening in a couple of key positions. If you go
defense
through the squad, there are a few.
They need a
new holding midfielder. They really need a good holding midfielder, and they've needed one for several years. They need a new center forward for sure. They could really do with a new right back. I think Fred is better than people give him credit for, but they could probably do with a new sort of shuttling midfielder number eight as well, possibly a new winger. So there's things that needs to be done in the market.
Well,
but
I think
there are some very good players there.
Okay, I don't disagree, but just watch the opening Arsenal goal today. You can count on two hands the number of defensive errors that take place in that sequence. That end with two guys that cost a lot of money that just literally whiffed at a ball that was crossed in the box in the most Sunday league manner of all possible ways. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I'm not here to argue that things are currently good.
Okay.
Things are currently very bad. But I think there are some players in there who, in a better organized team, especially with better protection from the midfield in front of them, can play better than they currently are.
Okay. Real quick, before we have to take a break, are you of the mind now, based on Spurs dropping more points today and Arsenal now getting two giant wins over Chelsea and United in the course of this week, is Arsenal now your favorite for the Fruitcake Cup?
Good word for it. Listen, they're back in the driving seat. You have to say that they are. Not just because they're 2 points ahead, but also because, you know, Tottenham have to go to Liverpool, which is not a fun game currently. What I think the last couple of weeks have taught us is, with these two teams in particular, both Arsenal and Tottenham are capable of winning games we don't expect them to, and they're capable of suddenly being very bad. So I'm very keen to not make any predictions of any kind when it comes to this last Champions League spot. Who knows is where I'm with that one.
All right, I'm in the same point as you. Ask us next week after Spurs has to play Leicester and Arsenal has to play at West Ham United. So that would be interesting. All right, we are going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to ask Lars about City and Haaland. I want to talk to him about Fulham. And maybe we'll even get into some Chelsea talk, too. We'll do that next here on The Kick Around. Welcome back to The Kick Around. We'll get into some Serie A and Bundesliga and Champions League semifinals here in just a little bit. I do want to quickly note, because Lars is also on the line live from London, something very interesting happened in American soccer today. I don't know if you noticed, Andy, but at the same time across three of the four major American broadcasters at 12 o'clock today, each of the three were showing a big-time soccer game.
Yeah.
NBC was showing the Premier League game. CBS was showing the NWSL game. And ABC was showing the Bundesliga, their Clásico.
It's happened a couple other times when all three networks have shown a game, but yeah, it's cool that it's happening more often. So
you get to watch more European soccer over here than you do over there, Lars.
You really do. I mean, we don't have the sort of what is for us the afternoon kickoff on the Saturday. That's subject to a blackout in the UK. So if you live in a house right next to the stadium, but you can't afford to go every week, then you will not be able to watch your team, whereas you guys over there will. So that is a strange state of affairs.
That's what makes USA great.
Fully taken advantage of all the football we can watch from the Premier League. One thing I've noticed, Lars, this year, and I don't know if it's just just me. But and obviously, I watch a lot of Liverpool. I'm a Liverpool supporter. And because of that, I watch a lot of City as well, because I have a vested interest in what they're going to do game in and game out. But watching other teams after having watched games those two teams play, I sometimes get frustrated with the skill level, which is crazy to say, of other, like, you know, normal run-of-the-mill teams in the Premier League, like decision-making in the final third and ideas that players have with the ball. And I think it's because I watch so much Liverpool and Man City now, and the gulf seems to be bigger than ever. And so are we now, is this the greatest difference that we've had between what City and Liverpool are doing on the field and the rest and the others that we've ever seen?
Ooh, that's a good question. Whether the gulf is bigger than before, I can't confidently answer without really sort of going back the years and spending some time on that question. But what I want to say is that these teams are exceptional, right? This is not the norm, what they're currently doing. And I'm looking at numbers right here. I mean, the four highest points totals ever accumulated in the Premier League season were by all done by these two teams in the last few years. So this is an exceptional level of execution that we're seeing from these teams. And I know some will then immediately think, well, it must mean the rest of the league is terrible. But not so. I mean, because of the financial advantages of the Premier League, they're sort of attracting top-level talent from other leagues around Europe. So you have mid-table teams in England, some relegation-threatened teams in England, who are picking up players who would otherwise play for or be of interest to Champions League clubs in other countries. So the league is tough, yet Manchester City and Liverpool are just running away with them. And I know we always try to guard against hyperbole, but I think we have to just acknowledge that these are historically good teams, the both of them. And the way someone put it to me recently, you know, Liverpool are the most smartly run club we've seen recently in Premier League history, whereas Man City are also very smartly run, and they also have infinite wealth behind them. And it's a terrifying combination.
And I think we're also at the time when both teams are peaking from the work that Pep and Klopp started at the club, off-field stuff too, and just the process, the training, the nutrition, all ideas that they brought. And 6 years later, 7 years later, it's all peaking now, and I think this is the result.
It is, and the thing, Lars, that I think is most frightening is the word that it appears, by all accounts, unless you've heard something different, that the machine, the Norwegian monster, Erling Haaland, is about to sign a massive deal to become the striker at Manchester City, which, when you really begin to think about that, unless there's something about this that you're going to tells me otherwise, that is a frightening addition, and it just doesn't seem very fair.
Increasingly, it does seem like that's what's happening. Now, there's been a few reports suggesting that that's the way the wind is blowing. I mean, this is someone like Jan Åge Fjørtoft, who's kind of known to be quite close to Haaland and also works in the media, insists that, you know, nothing's been decided yet. But we also have numerous reports suggesting that he is going to City. And that does make sense. I think we're all sort of kind of understood. It's been widely understood to be between City and Real Madrid. And the situation with Real Madrid is that Karim Benzema is just having a monster season, and they're probably bringing in Kylian Mbappe. So if you're Erling Haaland, you look at this and say, I'm not really sure where I fit in here. So going to Manchester City makes total sense. They don't have a striker, for God's sake. I mean, Gabriel Jesus scoring a bunch of goals today aside.
Against Watford.
That is a caveat. But there is a slot there that's an obvious opening for a pure number nine to come in. So it does seem to make an awful lot of sense. That's true. But that also raises a whole bunch of questions. He is a very different type of player to the kind of strikers Pep Guardiola has enjoyed working with in the past. So I think he will present a bit of a challenge to Guardiola. He might have to alter his ways a little bit. And I think off the pitch as well, he's a slightly different character to the type of guys Guardiola tends to like to work with. So the dynamics here, if he does go there, are absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting because, I mean, they're talking about paying him £50 million a week, which is an insane amount of money, along with all the other piles of cash they're going to have to hand over to Dortmund and to his manager and to his dad just to make this deal happen.
But they will.
But they will do it, and they're probably smart to do it. But I it would not... Is there a world, and this reminds me of when Chelsea went out and paid all that money for Lukaku, and we were all convinced that that was the thing they needed to make sure that they won the Premier League this year, and look how that turned out.
Or when United did this,
you could go through a whole bunch of signings. There is probably a realistic world where Haaland probably struggles for a while in the Premier League before he turns into the potentially the great that we all assume he will be eventually.
I think that's possible. The exact financial details, I mean, have yet to emerge, but I think we can all agree it's going to be a lot of money. And I mean, City, again, they haven't played with an outright number nine. They like playing with a false nine who comes deep and who joins in with the build-ups. They can create overloads in midfield and all these sort of things. They're going to have to play slightly differently if you stick Erling Haaland up front there. But on the other hand, you can say, you know, one of City's signature moves is that they kind of work their way down to the byline and then they play either a cutback or a low cross in front of the box. Like, Erling Haaland will love those. He's right. Very good at timing his run and timing his movements in the area. You can just imagine him sweeping those, just a ton of those into the goal. So there are some tactical adjustments that will have to be made. And you make the Lukaku comparison. I mean the worrying comparison is that there could be an element of Ibrahimovic going to Barcelona here, not just in the sense that he's not an obvious fit sporting wise, but also personality wise. He is a slightly different character, again, to the sort of the attentive schoolboy types that Guardiola really like. Erling Haaland is a very confident young man. He's a bit of a larger than life character in his own ways, and I like I said, I'm absolutely fascinated to see how this works out, if it does actually happen.
Yeah, well, I hope he plays in the Premier League. I would love to see him week in and week out. I do want to move over and ask a little bit more about the Chelsea and Lukaku situation, because, again, I feel like I'm not crazy in saying that when that deal was made, I think you were part of the same train I was on, which was like, yep, that's going to work out really, really well for them. But I'm not quite sure where it went. Like, what went wrong there, Lars?
I think there are a couple of considerations. Well, I mean, one thing is tactical. I think Lukaku at Inter played, and when he played his best football of his career at Inter, and also when he's played very well for the Belgian national team, you know, he's a big guy, but he's not a target man. Like, he's not great if you, like, hit long balls to him, and he's actually not great back to goal. He's very good when he has space to run into, and Inter were playing the kind of football we're seeing Tottenham attempt to play under Antonio Conte. They were quite direct on the counter, and Lukaku has sort of suggested, I think, that at Chelsea, he wants the ball played to him quicker. Like, he wants the ball into space. He wants to attack space. He would also like crosses to attack. Chelsea don't cross the ball very much, and they're a little bit patient in their build-up, which means that Lukaku, he just doesn't really get the service that he wants. That's one thing. But then there is a mental aspect to this as well. I think Lukaku is someone who plays a lot better than even when he's confident. And all athletes are better when they're feeling good and they feel confident. But Lukaku in particular...
It's true with Andy, a little bit prone.
Lukaku in particular seems prone to, you know, at Inter, he was the main man, he was the focal point, you know, he was the one everyone and everything went through. And then he's gone to Chelsea and it just hasn't kind of worked. And he looks like a spare part and he looks awkward and, you know, his first touch isn't very good at the moment. And it just, you're right, it hasn't worked at all. He seems to not be enjoying the situation very well, and he hasn't, you know, been able to force his way back into the team, and currently they look a lot better when he's not there.
All right, I want to move on for a second for the newly promoted Fulham FC, which the other day finally officially certified themselves as a Premier League team for the 22-23 season coming They're back, and, you know, if you're an American, Fulham is a club that a lot of Americans love because a lot of great Americans have plied their trade there over the years, including Clint Dempsey. But here's a club that has done nothing but go up and then come back down and then immediately come back up and then go back down and now come back up. And is this the season that Fulham finally stays in the Premier League, or is this just more of the same? And what must it be like to be a Fulham fan? Is it just the highest of the highs and lows of the lows?
Well, you kind of alternate. You have really good years, and then you have, you know, less good years, I guess. But there's still a big American presence there, of course, with Tim Ream in defense and Robinson at left back, who plays for the U.S. national team, doesn't he? Of course, he's born in the U.K., I think.
Yeah,
but anyway, I've been thinking a lot about this because we've seen it with Norwich, who came up and were better than Brentford, for instance, by some margin in the Championship when they came up. But they're going straight back down again, and Fulham, who are now going up. And I don't think a lot of people will be running off to Vegas to put money on Fulham to stay up next season. I think that would not be a good move. And I do wonder if it's to do with the way they play, because it is an odd thing with soccer, is that you come up and suddenly you face much better teams every week. And I think a team who is designed to have the ball a lot, who is designed to play very positive football, maybe not used to defending a lot without the ball, maybe not used to having to sit back and be compact and win a lot of physical battles, maybe they struggle a little bit when they come up. I think they're just... It's a different task beating teams that are slightly worse than you every week than it is trying to sneak points here and there against teams that are better than you. I think it demands slightly different things tactically. I think it demands slightly different things mentally. And I guess what Fulham really needs is to add some sort of slightly combative fighters in the team over the summer.
So from the not business perspective, but from what's better for the club, going up, coming down, going up, coming down. Same with Norwich. They've been doing it now just as long. They flip the alternate years, actually, Fulham and Norwich. It's not the end of the world, though. I mean, if you're a supporter of the club, you're better off doing that than, I mean, would you rather stay in the Premier League indefinitely and always finish 15th?
Southampton?
Exactly.
Right.
That's a really interesting question. I keep saying that. You're asking very good questions tonight, guys.
What the Kick-Around's known for, Lars, asking really good questions.
Good as in difficult to answer, but I've spoken to some fans who actually find that being a good team in the Championship is just kind of more fun than being an average team in the Premier League. But there is something about being in the top league in the land, you know, being on the TV every Saturday night when everyone sits down to watch the highlight show with Gary Lineker like everyone does here. And, you know, being relevant, there is something about being part of the big time. Whereas if you're a season ticket holder and you go to the games every week, then yeah, there's a case to be made that actually you have more fun in the Championship.
Yeah, the fear is that you Sunderland and then one year suddenly, boom, you drop even farther down. And that's the risk you run by doing this yo-yo.
Yeah, or even, I mean, for teams that come down, if they don't manage to come back up again before the parachute payments end, because the way they work, you still get some of the big time money for a couple of seasons to keep you going. If you don't manage to go up, but you're still stuck with a big salary bill, you can get into real trouble. And we've had Derby County almost being liquidated this season because they have huge debts and have no money. So this can go very badly wrong once you fall off this sort of carousel.
All right, Lars Siverston live from London. Real quick, Lars, Christian Eriksen, will he stay at Brentford for the next season?
I increasing murmurs that Tottenham might be interested.
Really?
And I mean, that
makes sense.
It would make sense. I was watching Brentford Tottenham today, and I thought, wow. I think a lot of Tottenham people were watching this wishing Christian Eriksen played for the other team because they really needed someone to open up their opponents, just as they did against Brighton the last week. A very, very bad game that I saw live.
Yeah, you've had too much Spurs injected into you in the last couple of weeks or so. You seeing them live and not getting the results. I know you're a frustrated Spurs fan, Lars.
I mean, I'm not going to get into it. I've settled down. I've had an hour to settle down before I came on here. But they were really terrible. They were just hot garbage in exactly the same way they were hot garbage a week ago, which is very frustrating.
All right. Hey, you can, real quickly, I forgot. I asked Andy this. He didn't know the answer. Who is the giant bodyguard-looking guy on the sideline next to Conte? Is that an assistant coach?
I believe so. I'm not sure.
He's got a black suit on with a black turtleneck, and he's bald-headed, and he looks like all he does is CrossFit all day.
I haven't noticed that. I'll look into
that. Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. He looks very intimidating on the sideline when they're substituting players. He doesn't look like a manager. He looks like a weightlifter. So, I don't know.
I think Peter has a crush.
Maybe. It's possible. He is handsome. Yeah. All right. Lars,
I think all top coaches should have someone slightly unhinged as part of their posse, you know, if it all goes wrong on the sideline.
I will say, I used to make fun of Klopp for having a Klopp lookalike on the sidelines, only to find out that Ten Hag also has a Ten Hag lookalike on his staff that is coming Manchester United, by the way. So maybe that's a good sign, right, Lars?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's so much potential there. Hey, if you just want the other guy to do the press conferences for you as well, that would be fantastic. So you don't have to speak to reporters. It would be very useful.
The great Lars Siverston live from London. Always love talking to you, my friend. We will talk to you again soon. Be safe.
Anytime, gentlemen.
All right, when we come back, we are going to turn on the phone and call up our friend Daniel Robston to talk some Serie A next here on The Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on The Ticket. My
Peter. He's Andy. Thanks again to Lars Siverston for joining us and all of his stuff. All right. We haven't talked to this guy in quite some time. It's been a while since we did a little Serie A talk. And so now on the ticket, whatever the official sponsor is these days around here, hotline, it is one Daniel Robertson. Hello, Daniel. Welcome back.
Hello, guys. How is it going? Long time no talk. The Italians are out of Europe. They're out of the World Cup.
Man, it's been a long time since we haven't even talked since they got booted out of the World Cup qualification.
Yes, there is a lot of soul searching going on in Italy right now for a number of different reasons around Calcio. But yeah, we'll get into it.
Well, no, you know, actually, that is a good place to start, because I think for the perspective of the P1, some of which have been following this game a long time, some of which have not been following it a long time, we only know international soccer through the eyes largely of the United States. And you think of the Italians as, you know, juggernauts. But I have to assume, you know, a lot of people in Italy are, I mean, I'm interested in knowing what your friends in Italy are saying and doing on the fact that now the Italian national team will have missed two World Cups in a row.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. It's definitely something you don't expect. I believe the last time Italy played in like a knockout round game was the World Cup final that they won. it's unbelievable going back to see, you know, they've been really poor and you know, kind of, I saw you tweet earlier about, you know, a world where Manchester United and the Dallas Cowboys are not, you know, big teams in their respective sports. It's the same thing with Italy. Like you said, they win the Euros, but they can't do it at the World Cup. And it's just an older generation that they didn't really rotate out, and you get a couple of key injuries and some bad luck. But I mean, look, after it's bad luck once, but you miss two World Cups in a row, you got to make some changes.
Well, okay, so that's easier said than done, changes, because when you combine that with the fact that when you look at Champions League over the last decade, other than a couple of good Juve runs, there's really it hasn't been a second or third Italian team do much in Champions League in a while now. So over the last 10-15 years, there's been enough of a non-Italian-like performance over these last 10, both at the club level and at the national team level, that you have to start wondering if maybe now this will spur them to start making changes within the industry in Italy, like player development and how they spend their money, fiscal responsibility, which is something the Italian, you know, Italian soccer world hasn't worried about ever.
Right.
Right. You nailed it. And even developing coaches, because, you know, the coaches in Italian soccer in general are older coaches like Ranieri and Capello and the older coaches. They haven't developed. There's not a lot of good young coaches coming through and not a lot of good young players coming through, except the likes of maybe Federico Chiesa. And, you know, when Juventus was dominating Italian football, one of the benefits to that was the same players were playing on club as were playing in the national team for the most part. And so, you know, they were really meshed together well. And as Juventus has fallen off in recent years, it's hurt the Italian national team. And yeah, I mean, you said it, look, the last time, besides Juventus, who made a couple of finals in the last decade, you really have to look back to that Mourinho-led treble team with where Inter Milan kind of caught lightning in a bottle and won the Champions League back about, what, almost 12, 13 years ago. There hasn't been any success since. And as we said, look, there's no Italian team in the semifinals of the Europa League or the Champions League. And the only team still alive is actually Roma in the Europa Conference League, which, I mean, Roma versus Leicester will be interesting, but it's pretty shocking to see.
Man, all I can imagine is, for as much crap as Mourinho used to give the Europa League, how embarrassed must he be that he's having to play in the Conference League thing? The other part of this story that I'm interested in, Daniel, is here in the United States, when the U.S. misses a World Cup, the outcry and the pitchforks and torches that get lit by the masses over how the federation is run has been endless. Is there that same kind of attitude and outcry and controversy amongst the Italian fans, or do they have a different attitude about it in terms of how the structure is run over there?
Well, there's a big change between wanting some, you know, there's a big difference between wanting some change and it actually happening. You know, there hasn't been much change. Things are kind of status quo right now. I will say it's tough because you did have, I mean, Italy did win the Euros, you know,
right,
it wasn't very long ago. It was last summer, you know, so it's tough.
All right. Well, let's look into the league itself. One of the stories, I'm just going to turn to you. What is your favorite ongoing story in Serie A these days?
Well, it's not my favorite because they're the biggest rival of Juventus, my beloved team, but Inter Milan has finally run away a little bit from the pack. In the last month, it was really, really a three-horse race. I mean, you could say Juventus was on the periphery maybe if they had gotten – they had about a 13-game unbeaten streak that kind of got them in the conversation. But in reality, Inter Milan has taken charge. They're a point ahead of Milan at the top, 5 points ahead of Napoli. They beat Roma today 3-1, which is a huge win for them. They beat Milan 3-0 in the Coppa Italia semifinals on Wednesday. Milan's got to go to Lazio tomorrow. If they don't win, given what Inter's schedule is left, it's probably just going to be about it in Serie A, and Inter's going to win a second consecutive title. That's pretty much the biggest story right now. And their forward, the Argentine Lautaro Martinez, he scored like 4 goals this week in 3 big games. Rounding into form, that's a name you're going to want to remember for the World Cup coming up. So, yeah, I mean, as unfortunate as it is for me, you've got to give credit where credit is due, and Inter is starting to break away from the pack.
So Juve is currently in fourth, 4 points behind Napoli. If they do end up finishing fourth for the season, it'd be the first time in I don't know how long, 10, 12 years, that Juve hasn't finished top three in consecutive years. But considering where they finished last year, is a top four finish good enough for the fan base? Will it be considered a successful season if they finish top four and no better?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Andy. And I think it's pretty much assured at this point with Roma losing today. It would take basically Juve losing their last 5 games, and they've got a couple of easy ones there. I think it's a successful season for Juventus. They're in the Coppa Italia final as well. Sorry, guys, they beat Fiorentina on Wednesday to make Rome again, I know. But in reality, the point is, there's a direction now. There wasn't a direction a year ago. Weston McKennie's been hurt. Federico Chiesa's been out most of the second half of the season. If both of those players were healthy, which it's amazing to say, it's amazing to put Weston mm-hmm. McKennie as one of the key pieces to Juventus. That's still crazy to me.
It is crazy to hear.
It's crazy, but he comes back, and by the way, for all the U.S. fans out there, he could pretty much be back within the next couple of weeks. I would expect he might actually play in that Coppa Italia final, which would be really neat. But yeah, you know, there is a direction to things now for Juventus. They're a piece or two away, but given what it was last year versus this year, I would definitely consider this to be a successful season. And there's been rumors that even a French midfielder from Man United might be looking for a really nice return to Turin. So let's keep our eyes peeled on
that. Wow. Yeah, they can have him. Hey, look at the table, Daniel. It appears that our team, Andy and I's Italian club, Fiorentina, may end up back in Europe for the first time since, I think, like 2016, 2015, something like that.
Yeah, it's been a successful season for Fiorentina. They've actually been really, really good recently. I don't think they've, outside of the Coppa Italia, lost to Juventus. I don't think they've lost in about 2 months. And the thing that they have, guys, if they can get into Europe, they got money. They got some money.
They have Vlahovic money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not just any money.
By the way, Chiesa money too, because half of the money came in last year.
Oh, that's
the
right.
The other half is coming in this summer.
Nice.
So, you know, you look at, I'm sure this is a nice little transition, but maybe you look to Venezia and an American midfielder at Venezia that's been playing really well. Look out. I think Fiorentina might look for an American this summer.
All right. Speaking of Venezia, they are down at the bottom of the table. We thought maybe there was a chance they would stave off relegation, but now they seem almost certainly doomed to play in Serie B, which does lead me to this question. Actually, if you're a Tanner Tessman fan, former of FC Dallas, in some ways, that actually works better for him because he'll probably get a lot more opportunity playing in Serie B than he was getting for them in this league.
Yeah. You know, it's been a beautiful dream for Venezia this year. They've gotten some results. Even being in the league is not something anyone would have expected. But yeah, they're going to be going down. Unfortunately, they lost today. They're down at the bottom of the table now. I think that Busio has been good enough that he's going to get sold on. But yes, Tanner Tessman is the kind of player that you give him 90 minutes a week in Serie B. I think it could be a really good thing for him, developing. It's a tough, crowded national team setup. I don't know if he's really going to be on that radar. But Busio, on the other hand, I could see him moving to another Serie A team. But yeah, let's all enjoy these last five matches in Venice. I don't know that Serie A football is going to be back there next year.
All right, Daniel, and last question. Do you think the country of Italy will survive the more than 2 week vacation of the Soroy brothers of that nation? Do you think that country will stand by the end of this vacation?
Oh my gosh. I would pay a lot of money for a hidden camera to see the reactions of Italians as the Soroy brothers are
walking their restaurant
along the beach. Yeah, in a restaurant with the Mavs game on their phone or something. You know, I would absolutely, and I would love to translate for them.
Asking for spaghetti and meatballs.
and fettuccine Alfredo.
And fettuccine Alfredo.
Right, yeah. How many
Italians has Mike Soroy pissed off in the last 2 weeks? I'm sure the numbers start somewhere in the double digits. No doubt about it. All right. Thank you, Daniel Robson, our favorite enthusiastic Italian football correspondent.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good talking to you again. All right. When we come back, it is now almost time for Champions League semifinals. We'll preview those games here next on the Kick Around. Der Classico or Der Classiker? That's it. Der Classiker.
Der Classiker.
I'm getting all mixed up. That happened earlier today, and we'll talk to the good Tyler Kern, our German Bundesliga correspondent, here in just a little bit. But first, this week is the week that the Champions League semifinals kick off, Tuesday and Wednesday. One game Tuesday, one game Wednesday, and we need to preview those. First up on Tuesday, 2 p.m. on your Paramount Plus. I wonder if they're also doing these on CBS broadcast like they have been. I'll have to look that up. Is Man City facing off against Real Madrid? And my one note out of this game is I don't know if I can remember and I'm sure somebody's going to go, no, Peter, you're totally forgetting this. But has there been a striker on the stunningly clutch run of scoring goals that Karim Benzema has been on for Real Madrid?
Lewandowski last year for Bayern, or 2 years ago when they were winning games 8-1.
Different, because Benzema's goals are coming.
Clutch, you mean?
And that's what I said. Clutch goals. Yeah.
Right.
Like just scoring.
And the number of them.
Right. And the type of goal.
Yeah.
It's not like he's scoring the same goal over and over.
Yeah.
Every goal is a different skill set.
Yeah.
A different piece of magic.
And he's 36. We keep going.
He's 34.
Back to 34. Okay.
34. But even Lars mentioned earlier that because for a long time, people have been making this assumption that Real Madrid next year, we're going to make two big purchases, Mbappe from PSG and Erling Haaland from Dortmund. Maybe now that doesn't necessarily have to happen because Benzema's playing as well as he's been playing.
Yeah, but is this one of those, not lightning, and look, he's had a good career, but this particular run that has been so outstanding, I mean, this is not going to keep up.
Well, hold on a second.
Okay.
Let me show you something. Running back to 2018, how many goals? Well, let me just tell you. And since 2018, Karim Benzema in La Liga has scored 21 goals, 21 goals, 23 goals, and this year, 25 goals.
So he's getting better, is what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing. You have to worry when a player is 34, because you know when you get to be that age, with an exception of very few athletes like Ronaldo, for example, that keep going a little bit, you know, it just suddenly happens one season to the other that you start to see the decline almost immediately.
Or it could take just one injury, right?
Yeah. So if you're Real Madrid, you know, I think, and you think you have all the money in the world, like Perez, the president thinks he has, that they still want to go after Haaland, but does Haaland want to go to Real Madrid? And I think that's what you mentioned to Lars, that it, or maybe Lars mentioned it in the previous segment.
Well, I think he wanted to for a long time.
But I think
but
so
now
much,
yeah. I think that may be the side factor, which then runs into the idea of him playing at City, which is this hilarious thing.
I thought it was funny when you said it wasn't fair being a United fan when you said that's just not fair.
Well, I was kidding, because that obviously for a generation, all we did was pick up everybody else's best players. Okay. So, yes, I get the irony.
So you're saying Real Madrid then has a chance against City in this tie?
I do, for two reasons. One is the fact that the second leg is in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that especially now that away goals have been eliminated, having that second leg at home, especially if you end up going to extra time and penalty kicks, is of even more value. Yeah, a big advantage, yeah.
Yeah.
The second reason is because it's Real Madrid, and they have this weird kind of
aura about him.
Yes. And City, for whatever reason with Pep, you just never know what kind of
overthinking
he's going to do.
It's true. Man, are we really saying this, that Pep might get in the way of City advancing to the final?
There are plenty of people that would tell you that's what's happened with City the last several years.
Particularly Champions League. This is where he overthinks.
Specifically Champions League.
Yeah, Champions League, right. Yes. And, man, this is the one trophy that Pep wants, City wants.
It's the one they haven't won.
It's the one they haven't won, and Pep wants this one with City, too. He's won it, but not with City. And, I mean, but you know what's getting in the way, too, is that Liverpool is tugging at their heels. I mean, if they were running away with the EPL, with the Premier League title, this would be a lot different for City. And I think you don't have to worry about rotation, all that. But he's got to worry about Liverpool domestically as well. And it makes things a little bit more difficult, even though Liverpool is also playing in the other semi. But I think Liverpool's been doing a better job of rotating. I take that back. They've just been able to rotate better because they haven't been hit as hard with injuries. And I think that's why I think Liverpool has a better chance, other than also they're playing Villarreal, to advance in the finals, more so than City has to get by Madrid.
Well, that game is on Tuesday, and as I said, it is at the Etihad in Manchester. It will be fascinating to see how that game plays out. Again, don't forget, there are no away goals, so it's not like City was ever going to sit back to begin with. Madrid will do what they do, but they are in fine form, no doubt about it. Now, the other game, which is now on Wednesday, is Liverpool hosting Villarreal, and again, just like the other tie, this is a situation where Liverpool has to play their home game first, and they don't get that advantage. Yeah. And you know what? If you asked me to put money on it, I would put money on Liverpool. But it would not surprise me if somehow, because they're playing so well in this tournament, Villarreal doesn't pull off some sort of upset.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they got rid of Bayern Munich, and they got rid of Juve. This team is legit. They're doing what they need to do to win games and advance, and they're being well coached by a coach who fancies himself and is really good at playing these kind of tournaments. He won a bunch of Europa titles without Madrid and Atletico and Barcelona. We're talking about Emery. So, but I still do think that Klopp is doing such a good job of rotating his players and using his depth, the depth of his roster, to both do well at domestically and to do well in this tournament. And, you know, maybe I'm an overconfident Liverpool supporter now, but I feel pretty good about advancing here.
Liverpool,
the minute I say that,
like a doo-doo.
Yeah, the minute I say that. But full respect to Villarreal, and it will be difficult. But I would, you know, wouldn't you love to see a Liverpool City final just to add more drama to the whole thing? Or are you done with the whole City Liverpool?
No,
you
know, because that, that's the best. That's the best quality soccer that we get to see these days, and it and that. That draw a few weeks or however many days ago it was, a couple of 3 weeks ago.
2-2.
Man, that game was fantastic. That game was a total joy to watch. And I suspect this will be too. I clearly City has the tougher draw out of the two.
Yeah, right.
Liverpool's got the better one. Villarreal's just that if you talk about maybe
that team.
Yeah, that effing team. That as effing Mike team. Reiner used to call it,
right.
Villarreal may be
that. Yeah.
Along with all the other kind of ancillary things that come along with the fact that you hear all these stories about what a tiny town and the way the structure and all
cool
that
story.
Stuff.
If they wanted it, it would be a cool story. And definitely if Villarreal wins and they get past Liverpool, that's who I'm rooting for in the final no matter who they play. One quick observation, too, I want to make, because we've kind of been bagging on La Liga for a little bit now that it's like a top-heavy league and this and that, and Barca and Real Madrid are having problems. But if you look at, you know, for certain, this year's four teams in the Champions League, the four finalists, two are La Liga, two are EPL. You know, we're used to Premier League teams doing really well over the last decade in the Champions League. But teams from Germany, Italy and France have largely just been one team. It's been Bayern, Juve, and PSG representing those three other leagues. Whereas La Liga has had Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Sevilla, Villarreal all advance into the later stages of Champions League. So I would say, you know, maybe La Liga is doing something right because in international competition, European competition, they do really well. Whereas Bundesliga, Serie A, and teams from France, other than those big three, constantly let us down once they get into those tournaments.
Yeah, and we would not be doing our jobs just to at least mention what happened yesterday in the women's game. I don't know if you saw this, but Barcelona hosted a women's Champions League game between Barcelona and Wolfsburg, and there were 91,000 people at the Camp Nou, which actually broke their own record, which was the largest attendance for a women's club game in history, again, breaking their own attendance.
Yeah,
so that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, the attendance record that was set 2 weeks ago was against Real Madrid, right?
I think that's right,
in the Champions, but still, you look, okay, the Clásico, blah, blah, blah. Now it was against Wolfsburg. So this was, you know,
and they won the game like 5-1, and I think I'm correct in saying they have won their last 40 games in a row.
Wow.
They're like the old Pep Barcelona ticky-tacky teams that just used to mow everybody over. So those games are coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday. City hosting Real Madrid, and then Liverpool hosting Villarreal on Wednesday. The return legs are the following week, the 3rd and the 4th, and they swap days. Liverpool will go to Villarreal, and then City will go to Madrid on Wednesday the 4th. All right, when we come back, we'll dial up our friend Tyler Kern to talk a little Bundesliga next on The Kick Around.
Grab your beverage of choice and be part of Cowboys Happy Hour every Wednesday at 7 on The Tick. Our ranch reporter David Moore and pigskin panelist Tim Kalishaw of the Dallas Morning News crack open hot Cowboys opinions on free agency, free draft plans, and whatever the latest Cowboys controversy happens to be that week. It's Cowboys Happy Hour, and it makes us happy. Brought to you by Advanced Body Scan and Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket.
Hello, it is The Kick Around, our final segment of this particular day. Andy, one of my favorite things about this show is that we do have friends that have a bigger and greater love and pay more attention to leagues that you and I don't have time for, or, you know, choose not to watch. You know, we have Daniel that does Serie A and Buzz that does a lot of MLS stuff. And here on our special phone line, no wait, actually he's not, he's on via the miracle of the internet. Covering the Bundesliga for us, our German correspondent, the very German, Tyler Kern. Come in, Tyler.
Extremely German.
Do you have like a face? Is your face covered in sauerkraut and bratwurst juice right now?
Always. Yeah, that's all I do on Saturday is just sauerkraut and sausage, you know?
How old were you when you learned English?
Oh man!
Hey,
yeah, probably 22.
I do have a question.
What is 22 in German?
have no idea.
Before we really get into it, I do have a question for Tyler.
Yes, Andy.
Because you are the Bundesliga expert, and your coverage allows me to not have to follow it as closely. So I just have a general question. Like, who's in first?
See, I mentally prepare for this. You know, I took the dogs on a nice long walk. I cleared my mind. I built some stuff. I ate some more sauerkraut because I knew as soon as I got on this show today that Andy was going to begin the trolling efforts and try to draw me offside. And so I mentally prepared myself. I tried to get in a good place mentally, spiritually, physically. And then first question right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And Andy's already getting under my skin.
And the yellow flag is on the field. Yeah, Tyler Kern, yeah. Offside 5 yards.
Immediately. No, but it's a fair question. I mean... Bayern Munich. The story of the day is that Bayern Munich beat Borussia Dortmund today in Der Klassiker and to win their 10th straight Bundesliga title. So that is the answer to Andy's question, is that Bayern Munich continues their dominance of the league and there's nothing that anybody else can do about it.
How many times consecutively has this happened now?
10? Is it 10?
10. 10. Yeah.
Is it 10? So... Okay.
That is a record in the top five leagues in Europe. Juventus won 9 straight Serie A titles before they failed to do so last year. And then Bayern Munich has now eclipsed that.
Hey, did you know Liverpool won 1?
See, this, Tyler, this is how you get back at me.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's good.
Liverpool,
it's good.
Who is playing in the semifinals of the Champions League, a place that... And actually, this was my lead-up question, a spot that Bayern hasn't seen now in 2 years. This is the first time, I think, in a long time that Bayern hasn't reached the top four of Champions League. So is this the closest that a team that – I guess this is the question. Is this the closest that a team that has won 10 straight league titles, 10 straight domestic titles, gets to crisis? Because, you know, their star forward is talking about leaving, and there's talk that their manager's too young and lacks experience, and, oh, my God, you know, it took us, you know, this long to win the title, and we haven't done anything in Champions League now in, like, 2 straight years. Oh, my God. But really, if you're a Bayern supporter, you're almost, like, jaded about winning titles. It's all about Champions League, and I guess this is why this crisis is happening now.
Yeah, you almost have to manufacture some outrage and some chaos, right? Because that's what fans survive on to a certain extent. You love all the success, but you're bored with winning the Bundesliga year in, year out now, right? And so you have to create some kind of manufactured drama. And I suppose if there is something to look out for when it comes to Bayern Munich and will this dominance continue, it's that Robert Lewandowski, Thomas Müller, and Manuel Neuer are all out of contract next summer. And like you mentioned, Andy, the contract talks with Lewandowski especially don't seem to be going particularly smoothly. And so there's something to watch out for there. I don't think they can afford to keep all three of them, nor do they really want to continue to build their team around guys that are all reaching their mid to late 30s. So, you know, that's maybe the area that you look for if you are looking for some kind of, okay, will Bayern eventually slip up? But... Again, like they're so dang good at bringing through that next crop, that next generation. You saw Jamal Musiala, dual national, England, Germany, chose Germany, and is a Bayern Munich kind of youth kid, come up and score a goal today, and he's a fantastic-looking player and plays for Germany on the international level. And so it just always feels like they have that next person ready to step up, whether it's Alphonso Davies coming through or Musiala, like I mentioned. It just feels like they always have that next generation. At some point, this has to run out, right? But it doesn't look like it's happening anytime soon.
All right, now with Dortmund losing today and all of the work, you know, we were talking to Lars about this earlier, all the news that Erling Haaland is likely to sign a deal and get, you know, his clause triggered by City. How much does that change things for Dortmund leading into next season, as they appear to be kind of the perennial second place team in the Bundesliga year in and year out? But they also seem to be a team very good at selling off really, really good players and kind of reloading.
Yeah, they're going to go through another one of those cycles like what we've seen them do in the past, where they move on from one generation of stars just to bring through the next. But the question for Dortmund is always, can you put the right people around the young stars that you are developing, that you are bringing through. And they didn't do that around Jadon Sancho and Erling Haaland, right? It's such a missed opportunity as we sit here talking about Bayern Munich winning 10 straight, that for multiple seasons in a row, Bruce had Jadon Sancho and Erling Haaland on the same team, and Bayern Munich went through coaching struggles. They fired a coach mid-season with Niko Kovac, and they still ended up winning the title. And so that's the biggest question for Borussia Dortmund, is not whether or not they get the young players coming through decision right. I have a feeling they'll continue to scout those players really well, and it'll be an attractive place for young players like Jude Bellingham to go. But the question is, do they get the experienced, you know, old heads right on this team? They brought back Mats Hummels from Bayern Munich, and everyone thought, oh, great move, veteran presence. But the only reason Bayern Munich let him go is because they believed he was washed, and they were right. And so that's always the question for Dortmund, is whether or not they get those decisions right, and they just haven't recently.
All right, well, let's catch up with our local kid, Ricardo Pepi, who, got signed by Augsburg for a whole lot of money, went over there and started a lot of games, and, you know, you didn't expect him to start bagging goals left and right, but he hasn't yet scored for Augsburg. Did he even... I guess they play tomorrow, and he's not even starting now for Augsburg. What is... Are you hearing anything in particular about their temperature on him, or do you feel like everybody will be patient leading into next season?
I think people will be patient, and I think we kind of knew that these winter transfers are difficult, right? Especially for a young player to come into a team that's in mid-season, and not only are they in mid-season, but they're in a relegation scrap. They look like they're going to be pretty okay. They right now sit 6 points above the automatic drop zone. Remember, in Bundesliga, bottom two automatically go down. The third from the bottom plays in a playoff against third from the top in the second division. Anyways, so Augsburg sits pretty safe right now. But I think patience is kind of the key here. That those January transfers are tough. Give them a full offseason to actually get in with the team. I don't think there's too much panic.
All right, I'm going to ask you a hypothetical question, because I saw somebody kind of bagging on Pepi a little bit, and they were trying to pin his inability to score more on him versus the quality of the team. And I haven't watched a ton of Augsburg, but I've watched a lot since he joined the team. And my general reaction is that team is really bad overall, the level of players across. And somebody, and maybe I shouldn't be bothered by something somebody said on Twitter, which isn't a real place anyway. but it did raise a question. This person was convinced that Augsburg would, quote, win Major League Soccer. And my immediate reaction was, I've seen just enough of that team to realize there's no chance they walk in and win a season of MLS just because they're a German Bundesliga team. And I'm wondering, and because you're very familiar with MLS as much as you are with the Bundesliga, I'm interested in your perspective on that idea.
Man, it is always hard to compare across leagues like that. If you gave me, you know, full strength, absolutely flying mid-season, you know, mid to late season Seattle Sounders against Augsburg, that's a 50-50 toss-up to me. I just don't think Augsburg is very good. Obviously, being a Bundesliga team means that you're playing pretty high-quality competition on a game-in, game-out basis. They lost to Bayern Munich 1-0, that sort of thing. But, man, I don't think they're very good. They're really bad at creating chances. I haven't looked at the numbers again recently, but at the time when Ricardo Pepi joined that team, they were in the bottom three of the league in terms of in just about every chance and shot creating metric that you could find. They just don't create a ton of opportunity for strikers to score. And so when you're a guy like Ricardo Pepi, who, you know, even though Dallas wasn't awesome last year, he did a great job of getting in positions to score. And when he got those opportunities, he took them. Some regression was expected, and Augsburg just needs to be better in terms of chance creation and needs to improve their midfield, I think, in a big way.
I think the real question is, would Bayern Munich win 10 straight MLS titles? I don't know. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. 10 straight? I don't know.
They may win 10 straight and not give up a goal. that entire time, possibly. The other thing about Osberg I noticed lately is that when they do play Pepe, they've been playing him in a position that's not his natural spot. They've been playing him this weird, like they're playing a weird 4-4-2, but of the two strikers, they're sticking Pepe way out wide right.
Yeah.
And he's being asked to do more defensive work than attacking work, and I just feel terrible. Like, you can, if you've watched any Ricardo Pepe, you can look at him and go, that kid is miserable. Like, he's not happy being out there right now because he just realizes he's just going to have to gut this out until something changes one way or the other.
He is straight up not having a good time right now, Peter. And that's why, you know, we talk about fit, you know, fit mattering so much when it comes to these sorts of moves. And I know that Augsburg opened up the bank and really kind of backed up the truck for Ricardo Pepe, doubling like their previous transfer sum, kind of record transfer fee that they had ever paid. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they were in a position where they were ready for a striker to come in and make a huge difference, or that Ricardo Pepe at the age of 18, 19 years old was ready to go in and make a huge difference on a team that already wasn't creating shots and wasn't creating opportunities for their strikers. He's not that kind of guy. He's not going to take it and dribble it 20 yards, you know, around your back line and score. That's just not who he is. And so, yeah, the type of expectations that I think were placed on him immediately, and look, I was part of that, probably aren't helping, but I do think a full offseason will be in everyone's best interest.
All right, and to close up this Bundesliga segment, has it dawned on you, as it has with me, Tyler, that for the 2022-2023 season, there is now a looming chance that my Manchester United and your Union Berlin may face each other in the European Conference League?
Let's go.
I want to buy
Let's
tickets
make that,
to that.
Happen. Let's make that happen. No, Union Berlin with a big win over RB Leipzig today. Two goals in the final 5 minutes of the game to give Union the win over Tyler Adams and RB Leipzig.
They're actually in the Europa League now. So, like, forget Man
United.
This
shows them in six, which puts them in Conference League, is what I see.
No, yeah. Europa League.
Yeah.
No, Freiburg's in fifth.
I think they get two Europa League spots.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Okay, this is
the
only
seventh
get one.
Goes, yeah.
All right, well. Wow, that would be awesome if your German team and my tiny little English team got to play each other in the in European play. That would be a lot of fun. Tyler Kern, our special German Bundesliga correspondent for Krakenton. Thank you, sir. We love talking to you, my friend.
Thanks, gentlemen. I got some more sausages and sauerkraut that I got.
Yeah, right. Back to the sausages and sauerkraut.
Coming over.
Yeah. Have a great
Come
one.
On
we'll
over,
talk to you soon, Tyler. Absolutely.
See you guys.
All right, Andy, we have plowed through yet another fun-filled edition of the Kick Around.
Indeed, we have. I'm just trying to confirm if this table is right and whether they're actually...
It's anyway. Not the end of the season. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Nobody cares about specifics
info.
And facts.
Yeah, right.
They just love to hear us riff and talk
We're
off
riffers.
The top of our head
We're
and out
riffers.
Of our butts.
You have a prediction for tomorrow's Myerside Derby?
Yeah, 117 to God. 0.
Yeah, all right, I'll take it. Excellent.
Liverpool is going
all
to
right.
win.
By the way, the 25 pass goal Liverpool scored.
Thanks to Jacob for doing tickers. And thank you to EA. Special thanks to EA for double duty. And P1s, we love and adore you. Go on out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s.